us today.
All right, everyone, I'm going to call the meeting of the House Committee of Rules to order for Thursday, June 8th, 2017. Colleagues, we will be taking up our work sessions first. We'll start in on House Bill 3464 at 3:30, and we will not be taking up House Bill 3422. So with that, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 1022A.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1022A was originally heard on May 23rd. It is the measure that sunsets government boards and commissions. We adopted the A3 amendment. The A3 amendment restored the Special Legislative Committee on Public Education Appropriation. So now the measure sunsets 11 instead of 12 boards and commissions. It comes to you with minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1022A to the floor with the due pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved Senate Bill 1022A to the floor with the due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections?
I believe Jody.
Representative Hack?
Can you just tell me you were a no on that?
Do you have an objection?
Greg.
You could do a roll call. Yeah. Sam, can we do a roll call?
Sorry.
No.
I'll move. Never mind.
Task Force on Military Families.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we are not in possession of any other amendments for 1022. Is there an additional amendment?
Is there another amendment?
Just vote no on
it.
All right, Sam, can you call the roll? Thank you.
Representative
Hack?
No.
Representative Foley?
Aye.
Representative Kenmer?
No.
Representative Nose?
Sure.
Representative Warner?
Yes.
Vice Chair McLean?
Aye.
Vice Chair Rayfield?
No. Vice Chair Rayfield?
Yes.
Excellent.
Well, then I'll switch to no then.
Okay.
I was just going to courtesy move it, but since
I'll vote aye, and Representative McLean would like to change his vote. That the motion passes. Now we'll have Representative Rayfield carry that bill. Close that work session. All right, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3461.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3461 was originally heard on May 25th. It provides Attorney General with increased enforcement authority over contraband cigarette sales in conjunction with non-participating manufacturer adjustment settlement related to the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement. You have a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment amends the definition of units sold for purpose of collecting escrow on non-participating member manufacturers and removes from definition of person for purposes of investigative demand participating manufacturer as defined by the Master Settlement Agreement. It comes to you with minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the -1 amendment into House Bill 3461. Is there any discussion? And colleagues, I know Mr. Knott from the Attorney General's office is here if anybody has questions on the -1 amendment. All right, are there any objections? See none. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move the House Bill 3461 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 3461 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion carries. Anyone like to carry this? Not, I can carry it. Oh, Barbara Smith-Warner, Representative Smith-Warner. Close that work session. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3408.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3408 was originally heard on April 6th. It clarifies that person may update a register to vote by having another person deliver a registration card to designated agency or official. It requires county clerk use all available resources to complete voter registration card when it is returned with missing or incomplete information. If the clerk is unable to obtain information from current sources, county clerk is required to use reasonable efforts to contact person at least 3 times by telephone, mail, and email before individual is not registered to vote. You have a -1 amendment. It removes the requirement for county clerk to document 3 attempts to contact individual by phone, email, or mail. With the -1 amendment, Madam Chair, it has no revenue, no fiscal impact.
This is 3408. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then.
Fail to make the motion.
Okay, no. Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the dash one amendment into House Bill 3408. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3408 to the floor with the due pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 3408 to the floor with the due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I have discussion.
Vice Chair McLean.
The dash one is still, I guess that was put together by Representative Nose. Is that correct? So are the county clerks,
that's my question.
Are the county clerks opposed still or
Mr. Bovet, come on down.
And is Secretary of State Richardson's office here? Is Steve Elzinger anybody? Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel Association of Oregon Counties, here representing the Oregon Association of County Clerks. The county clerks were strongly opposed to the bill as written because of those specific lines that basically try to tell the clerks how to do their job when there's no evidence that they're not doing their job. So the dash one amendments remove the offending language. The clerks are now in neutral.
Thank you. Mr. Bovet.
Don't go yet.
Based upon your tone, I would say I'm an opponent to this bill.
Neutral, Mike.
Okay.
Representative Hack.
Thank you, Chair. Just a follow-up to that. So I get that the clerks are neutral, but is there any type of fiscal impact that the clerks foresee with this?
Chair Williamson and Representative Hack, no. We provided what we believe is either a minimal or a no fiscal based on the rest of the bill.
Further discussion? Yes, Vice Chair McLean.
Yes, it sounds like we are doing a good thing with the dash one amendment, but it doesn't sound like a consensus bill, so I'm going to do a courtesy no vote, I suppose, and I'm going to need to check up with the Secretary of State in my home clerk in Crook County and in Deschutes County and just see where they're at.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So how much does this change the job that they've already been doing?
Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto, without the amendments, it might change a few things here and there, and in some other counties change a lot, because it's almost like rewriting their job description in a way. Without the amendments, it probably doesn't have a whole lot of change, because as you heard testimony on the original bill from a county clerk himself, the clerks really work hard to fix any invalid voter registration or incomplete voter registration. They consider it one of their primary missions to get people registered that want to register.
A follow up?
Yes.
Yeah, so in the amendment, though, I think it says, or in the bill, it says, so they don't have to call the three times, but they have to make a concerted effort or something to that extent. Didn't they already do that?
Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto, yes. So that portion of the remnant of the bill would basically tell them to do what they're already doing. I guess it's fine.
Then why do we have this bill?
Representative Nose.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Barreto's question, the reason that I believe that we actually have the bill is because of line 6 and line 9 on the bill to make it crystal clear that it's okay for a person to deliver a voter registration card in person, as opposed to being male or otherwise. There was some ambiguity about that. And so from my vantage point, it's line 6 and line 9 that are the substantive part. Yes, when we had lines 20 and 22, that was new work or new things for clerks to do, and that's been removed. And I agree with the statement that was made by the witness. You know, in theory, you know, small letter B, 12 through 19 is things that they're already doing. But we talk about things that people are already doing in statute all the time.
Representative Barreto.
Yeah, thank you. Doesn't the bus project do that? Doesn't the, at county fairs, you know, the Democrat booth, the Republican booth, they sign up voters and throw them in a box and take them down to the county clerk. So isn't that already happening? Is that what you're saying?
It's already happening, but it's not clear that it's
permitted.
It's permitted.
Okay.
So we want to make sure that that activity is permitted by statute.
Chair clarified it better than I did.
I understand. All right. So.
I do. Thank you, Representative Barreto. I will try to be better.
Oh, did you? Have we already adopted the dash
we
one?
Mm-hmm. Adopted the dash one.
Then, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3408 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation.
Vice Chair McLean has moved House Bill 3408 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Madam Chair, as I said, I'm going to vote no just to make sure. I need to talk to my county clerk and the Secretary of State and assume they're good. And then maybe I'll be yes on the floor then if they are.
Okay, thank you. Additional discussion. Sam, can you call the roll, please?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Hatch.
Aye.
Representative
Holman. Aye.
Representative
Hammer.
Aye.
Representative
Dunn.
Yes.
Representative
Horn.
Aye.
Vice Chair McLean.
No.
Vice Chair
Rizzo.
Yes.
Chair Wilson.
Yes, motion passes. Carryover to Representative Nose. I will close that work session.
Which one are we on?
Now on to 2947.
This is bizarre.
2947?
Has Wisnet seen this?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is he okay with
yes.
this?
I checked
okay.
with him on the floor yesterday.
Totally. Madam Chair, I move.
Hold on. I got to
do it.
I don't.
I'm going to do a work session right now on House Bill 2947.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2947 was heard yesterday in this committee. At the time, we adopted the Dash 2 amendment, and it replaced the underlying bill. The Dash 2 amendment requires the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to report annually to Legislative Assembly on amount of debt state agency has written off, waived, settled, or determined not to be owed, or was canceled by Oregon Department of Revenue in previous fiscal year. It requires state agency to certify to DAS accuracy report, define state agency for purpose of report, and require and has a removes the original emergency clause. Madam Chairman of the committee, we have received a Dash 3 amendment. It makes one minor change to the Dash 2. The Dash 3 removes OHSU from definition of state agency. So we need to remove the Dash 2 amendment from the measure and adopt the Dash 3 amendment.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move to reconsider the vote by which the committee adopted the Dash 2 amendment.
Vice Chair McLean has moved. We reconsider the vote by which the committee adopted the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Motion passes. We now have the original bill in front of us.
Madam Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendment.
Vice Chair McLean has moved the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 2947. Is there any discussion?
And Madam Chair, my understanding is that the chief sponsor, Representative Wisnett, approves of the Dash 3 amendment.
That is my understanding as well.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Or any objections? Not, motion passes.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do not have the fiscal and revenue on the Dash 3 amendment. If it comes in by the end of the hearing, we can move it. Otherwise, we can carry it over to next week.
Great, thank you. I will close the work session on House Bill 2947. And we are going to stand at ease here for a few minutes till 3:30.
Are you going to make a toast, Barbara?
We are back on the record. I am going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3464.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3464, unless otherwise required by state or federal law, a public body is prohibited from disclosing specific information about person for purpose of enforcing federal immigration laws or asking about person's citizen or immigration status. Public body may ask about status for purpose of determining benefit eligibility. Public body may decline to disclose information concerning person's status unless required by state or federal law, court order, or warrant. It directs the Attorney General to publish model policies for public bodies intended to limit in manner consistent with state and federal law, immigration enforcement in public schools, public health facilities, courthouses, public shelters, and other public facilities. It encourages public body or entities that contract with public body for health care, education, or access to justice services to implement policies based on Attorney General's model policies. There is an emergency clause on the measure. We did have a Dash 2 amendment. It simply requires the public body review confidentiality policies biannually and not annually. We do not have a revenue nor a fiscal statement yet on the underlying or the dash two.
Excellent. Thank you. Governor, Madam Attorney General, Judge Waller. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs McLean and Rayfield, and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Governor Kate Brown. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 3464. And thank you, Madam Attorney General, for working with me to make Oregon a more welcoming and inclusive state for everyone. Oregon affirmed these values some 30 years ago in state law. Under the leadership of then-State Representative Rocky Barilla, both parties in the House and the Senate worked together and nearly unanimously passed Senate Bill 29. The bill made it illegal for Oregon law enforcement agencies from treating Oregonians as criminals on the basis of their immigration status. Since 1987, when the Oregon legislature adopted our sanctuary state statute, the state of Oregon generally has not engaged in federal immigration enforcement, and I think that's really good policy. The U.S. Constitution gives the federal government the power to control immigration, and the federal government cannot, under the U.S. Constitution, force state law enforcement officers to implement the policies of this administration. Our state and local law enforcement agencies are already overextended, doing too much with too little, and they are absolutely dedicated to keeping our communities safe. At a time when resources are scarce, we should not be spending state resources doing the federal government's bidding. In February, I extended the protections of Oregon's sanctuary statute by executive order. Under the law, law enforcement agencies were precluded from treating Oregonians as criminals solely on the basis of immigration status. My executive order extended that policies to all state agencies and our employees. I also established this policy for state agencies that Oregon is an inclusive jurisdiction that embraces, celebrates, and welcomes its immigrant and refugee residents and recognizes their contributions to the collective prosperity of all Oregonians. Finally, included in that order is a prohibition on the state from participating in the creation of a registry to identify people based on religion. We have heard threats of a Muslim registry at the federal level. I honestly don't know how sincere these threats are, but I want to be absolutely clear. We will not participate. Even rhetoric espousing such discrimination and hatred is absolutely concerning to me, as it is for many Oregonians. Just 2 weeks ago, the Portland community and our entire state was shocked and incredibly saddened to learn of the act of bitter intolerance on a MAX train and tragic stabbing of three courageous strangers. Hate and discrimination have no place in our Oregon. We must commit to keeping our communities welcoming and our hearts open to all who call our state home. House Bill 3464 is a further step toward upholding the civil rights of all Oregonians and keeping our state out of federal immigration enforcement. The bill was narrowly crafted to fulfill our obligations under federal law while minimizing our role in immigration enforcement. The bill does this in several ways. First, it directs all state and local jurisdictions to not gather information about Oregonian citizenship or immigration status when they are not required to by state or federal law. When agencies do have to gather citizen or immigration information, the bill authorizes agencies to keep that information confidential where disclosure isn't required by law. We don't want private information about people that we do not need. Second, the bill directs public bodies not to disclose private information like addresses or workplaces for the purpose of enforcing federal immigration laws. For example, if an undocumented immigrant witnesses a crime, she can disclose her personal contact information to the police without fear of the officer passing her personal information onto an ICE agent. Third, The bill directs the Attorney General to develop model policies that state agencies and local governments can adopt. State and local agencies are clamoring for resources on this subject. This bill directs the Attorney General to satisfy that need. I appreciate the Attorney General for already working with the Department of Education, along with the Latino Network, to make sure families with school-age children have the forms and access to the information they need to keep their families safe. I am deeply concerned and very alarmed by recent anti-immigrant measures undertaken by the federal government. History teaches us not to follow the federal government into public policy that betrays Oregon values. Just upstairs in the gallery, an exhibition documents our state's regrettable participation in the federal government's incarceration of Japanese Americans, including Minoru Yasui, who took his fight for justice to the U.S. Supreme Court and went on to be Oregon's only recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I highly commend the exhibition to all of you. Although the current state of affairs is very different from the Japanese internment, we should heed the lesson of that disgraceful episode. Oregon should stay true to our values. I respectfully suggest that House Bill 3464 is a step toward realizing Oregon's aspiration as a welcoming and inclusive place to all who call our state home. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Attorney General.
Thank you, Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs McLean and Rayfield. I'm Ellen Rosenblum, Oregon Attorney General, and I come before you in full support of House Bill 3464. Over the course of the last 6 months, my phones have been ringing. I have received call after call, many making the same request. My office has heard from school districts, courthouses, even mayors, asking, and in some cases pleading for help in dealing with federal immigration authorities. As Attorney General, I can tell you that the rules that apply to immigration enforcement are not simple or self-evident. When ICE comes, they don't come with a manual. Our communities have no consistent source for guidance when dealing with federal authorities. So oftentimes they turn to us, the Oregon Department of Justice, and we turn them away. We turn them away because we are the lawyers for the state. And in the absence of other direction from our legislature, we have no basis for providing assistance to our cities, our counties, or our school districts, no matter how badly it is needed. And so we leave them to their own devices to negotiate on their own the ambiguities of federal law. And in the lack of certainty or ability to tell Oregon residents what they should expect, fear and rumor hold sway and our communities crumble. This uncertainty damages our businesses. The fear of immigration authorities has emptied the downtown corridors of cities across Oregon. Representative Alonzo Leon will share with you the story of downtown Woodburn and of a community gripped by a fear essential enough to grind their economy to a halt. But this is not the only city or county so damaged. This uncertainty damages our budget. As our schools, courthouses, and other public accommodations are left to wrestle with these questions on their own, they are forced to draw on even more limited resources. This diverts from other budgets and priorities and allows our state resources to be funneled away and commandeered for federal purposes. This uncertainty damages our public safety. A 2013 study conducted by the University of Illinois found that 44% of Latinos considered themselves less likely to contact police if they are the victim of crime because they fear that police officers will ask them about their immigration status. A person who is forced to worry first about immigration will not only fail to call to report a crime that they experience, they will fail to report a crime that they witness. This uncertainty damages our public health. Confusion about immigration enforcement separates people from the services they need. It can separate the suffering person from the mental and physical health services they need. And it can convince the probationer that it makes more sense to disappear into the underground than to comply with the terms of their probation and to receive the treatment, counseling, and guidance needed to bring them back into society. This uncertainty damages our public education. In our increasingly diverse schools, fear of immigration enforcement makes children anxious and unfocused if they come to school at all. This fear can also keep a student from applying to college or financial aid ending their educational career and wasting their potential. Perhaps most of all, this uncertainty hurts our communities, paralyzing community members who have no idea what to expect when they send their children off to school, or when they visit their doctor, or when they drive off to work in the morning. This paralysis invades every aspect of the lives of these diverse and vibrant communities in our state, shattering their ability to provide their important and valuable contributions to their neighborhoods, their economies, and their households. House Bill 3464 aims to end this uncertainty. At its broadest, it aims to accomplish two objectives. First, it aims to provide our schools, courthouses, and other public accommodations with needed guidance in dealing with federal immigration authorities. This advice, which will be developed collaboratively between the public accommodations and my office, looks to provide simple guidance in understanding the rights and obligations we all possess in this area. This is offered with the intent of full compliance with all federal and state laws. Our job is to follow the letter of the law, but to understand that we need go no further. This guidance will be just that, guidance. Our communities will be free to use this advice only as far as they choose to do so. There is real value in consistency, city to city, school to school, for those who wish to accept it. Guidance is also about compliance and will make clear that where federal law applies, it must be fully and faithfully obeyed. Secondly, House Bill 3464 makes clear that where federal law ends, the privacy of our residents must begin. Oregon has a long-standing commitment to privacy that this bill only echoes. In the absence of a clear legal requirement, the government is not entitled to your personal information. Period. I would like to thank Representatives Alonzo Leon and Hernandez for their exceptional leadership in this area, and Governor Kate Brown for her partnership. We must work together to curb the fear that is paralyzing our most diverse and most vulnerable communities. I urge the passage of House Bill 3464.
Thank you. Judge Waller.
Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs McLean and Rayfield, members of the committee, I'm Nan Waller, presiding judge in Multnomah County. While OJD does not take a position on the bill, I thought it would be helpful to you to hear a little bit about the impact of immigration activities in and around our courthouses, and why it is important, and in fact imperative, that we take steps to preserve the neutrality of the courts in the eyes of all members of the public. The commitment courts make to the public is that we will provide a neutral forum for the resolution of disputes, and in doing so, access to all who seek justice. Every day, hundreds of people stream into our courthouses, victims of domestic violence, seeking protection orders, landlords and tenants, criminal defendants, parents trying to resolve custody and parenting issues, witnesses and litigants in complex civil matters. It is fundamental to our justice system that the doors are open to all. We do not ask immigration status or for documentation when we open our doors. Over the last several years, our court has worked very hard to maintain public trust and confidence. We've seen across the country what happens with the loss of confidence. We've adopted a pledge of fairness that we've posted throughout our courthouses. We've held public listening sessions so that judges can hear the diverse perceptions of the justice system from members of our community. All of these steps have been undertaken with the belief that access to justice is the cornerstone of our justice system. It is to the benefit of all of us that we encourage people to access the courts for disputes resolution in a civilized manner. However, since the executive order on deportation was signed in late January, we've had consistent reports from lawyers, community organizations, victims' advocates, and public inquiries to the court that some members of our community are afraid to come to our courthouses because of the practice of ICE activities in and around our courthouses. We have no authority to prevent ICE from being in the courthouse. We have no authority to prevent anyone. Our courts are, by tradition and by the Oregon Constitution, open to all. However, we are very concerned that there has been a significant chilling effect of ICE's actions in and around our courthouses, and that this will deter and has deterred members of our community from seeking redress in our courts. Given the impact of ICE activities in our courthouses across Oregon, Chief Justice Thomas Ballmer wrote to Attorney General Sessions and Homeland Security Secretary Kelly in April, asking them to not make arrests inside courthouses, or at least to include courthouses in their definition of sensitive locations, so that our courts can preserve their mandated impartial and neutral role. And I have copies of his letter, if you have not seen that, that I'll provide to the committee. I don't have data to share with you on how many people ICE activities in and around our courthouses have dissuaded from accessing the courts. And it would be indeed hard to measure how many people have not come to the court for a restraining order, how many people have not shown up to testify in a case, how many people have let their matter go and been defaulted. But I do have much anecdotal evidence of the impact of the activities. When we had one of our Perceptions of Justice listening sessions in January, it was scheduled for the 1st of January, and the weather ICE canceled the appearance. This was a listening session that had been requested by members of the Rockwood community, where there's a large Latino community. And we were told that busloads of people were going to come because they wanted to share with the judges how they viewed the justice system. It got canceled and it was rescheduled after the executive order was signed. When one of our judges, who is Hispanic, walked into the auditorium, he looked around and said, "I am the only Hispanic here." No one showed up from the Hispanic community. This very morning, I received word that at our East County courthouse, there had been ICE agents waiting outside a courtroom for an individual who was completing his hearing, and as soon as he left the courthouse, he was detained. We understand as judges that ICE has a mandate, but what we want to make sure that we preserve as a civilized community, and certainly our justice system has stood us well in this country for hundreds of years now, is that the courthouse be preserved as a place where people can seek redress. This bill does require that there, the public bodies not collect information. We are required, and one of the things that I assume will be looked at is we are required by state law across a number of case types to collect certain contact information. So I would assume that that will be one of the things that will be looked at. But I urge any efforts that we all can as Oregonians take to preserve the impartiality and neutrality of the courthouse and assure that anyone coming to the needing justice will feel confident and comfortable in physically coming into the courthouse. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Yeah.
Vice Chair McLean.
Judge, thank you for being here. Based on your testimony, one could infer that what you're asking for was not the law today, but my understanding it is the law today. So what is it about this bill that would remedy what you are saying has become a burden?
I assume that in the policy work that the Attorney General's office is doing, that there may be best practices that are put into place that will help give us some guidance. We've not been able to come up with a solution to the dilemma that we have faced since the end of January. It may be that this body chooses to look at some of the state statutes that require courts to collect contact information across case types. I don't have a solution for the dilemma that we face. We have been, immediately we were in contact with ICE, requesting that courthouses at least be considered as sensitive locations. That has not occurred. The Chief Justice wrote to Attorney General Sessions making a similar request. So I'm not sure how the bill will play out, how the actions the bill requires will play out in helping solve our dilemma, but it is one way of beginning to really have a public dialogue about those steps that can be taken to make sure that we preserve and protect the neutrality of the courts.
And the follow-up, may I? Thank you, Judge. Mm-hmm. If Oregon is a sanctuary state and that choice was made a long time ago, then interpreting that law should not be for the courts a a prerogative of the Attorney General, since the courts themselves are quite capable of interpreting the law. So I guess I still come back and say, what is it about this bill that is going to resolve the issue that you see in the court system?
And I apologize, I'm not sure that I'm following your question, Vice Chair McLean. This is not a question of the courts interpreting the sanctuary status of Oregon. It is what is concerning to us, and I'm not sure what the Attorney General will come up with in terms of the policy that the second section of the bill requires to provide assistance to courts or the courthouses in looking at how we maintain the neutrality of the courts by making sure that people feel that they can come to court without fear. And I don't know if the Attorney General has perhaps a better answer, having helped prepare the bill.
Thank you, Judge. If I might, Chair Williamson, Vice Chair McLean, and Vice Chair Rayfield, this bill strengthens our confidentiality practices surrounding being a sanctuary state. It has two parts. One part clarifies what is confidential information and what is not, frankly, under federal law. And we're very much aware that there's federal law that applies here and that we must observe. The current law does not specify any of these particular items of personal information that would now be declared confidential. And I think that while certainly 181A is a very important law, it's focused primarily upon the use of agency, resources for the purpose of detecting or apprehending persons who are only in violation of immigration laws. It says nothing, frankly, other than one very small mention of exchange of information about any of this long list of defined personal characteristics and information that we want to keep, frankly, from ICE when they come to detect or apprehend individuals. That's their job, but we are not wishing to assist them in this regard, and there's no federal law that requires it. State law doesn't either. State law doesn't indicate one way or the other, and this would make it clear what the state law is. It also, as to the guidance, would make it possible for people to turn to something rather than, as I indicated in my testimony, just simply be calling on the phone and begging for information that at the moment, frankly, the Attorney General is not in a position to give them. We'd like to be able to provide that guidance. We realize it can't be binding, but to be able to provide some opportunity for consistency from city to city, school district, courthouse to courthouse, it will be very valuable for us to be able to provide that information, which today is just simply not available, except on a case-by-case basis, perhaps from a city attorney, or certainly that's very helpful, but it's not consistent. It's not something that the Attorney General can assist with.
Yeah, then to follow up, General Rosenblum, is in your mind, is this bill necessary to interpret the law or to expand the law?
I think it's really different from 181A, and I think that's when you say the law, that's what you're referring to, because that's the only state law we have. We have, of course, the governor's executive order, which expanded upon this law. But this law does not, first of all, it only pertains to law enforcement. It does not, the law that's currently in place, it does not apply to all public bodies in the state. So it's quite narrow compared to what our proposed law would apply to all public bodies, except as required by state or federal law. A public body may not disclose, for the purpose of enforcement of federal immigration laws, the following information concerning any person. And then there's a long list of information. That's quite different from what our current law provides. And again, our current law, much narrower, applies only to law enforcement agencies, and is as specific to the use of resources for detecting or apprehending. So, and it says nothing about guidance. So that section is, of course, brand new, not provided for either in the executive order or in the current law. Thank you.
Do you have your hand up?
No, but I'll take the opportunity.
You moved quickly.
So thank you for your testimony. So we had a bill, I think, that we just voted on the House floor this week, and it had to do with rapes in college. And so young ladies were afraid to go to turn in their perpetrator because then they may be charged with a minor in possession or minor under the influence. So is this a little bit like what this does? So now we voted to take that away so that they couldn't get charged for the alcoholic beverage, but they can still have the freedom to turn in the perpetrator. So kind of an analogy of what's going on here, but the problem with this bill that I see is, with the young ladies, they can quit drinking or they don't have to do that again, and they could be within the law. But here you have someone who's outside of the law that you're trying to protect, and as long as they remain here without being a citizen, then they continue to break the law. Is that correct?
The concern of the court, Representative Bretta, members of the committee, is that we don't have a requirement at all of asking who is a citizen or who is undocumented or what their immigration status is. And we believe that it is imperative that people feel like they can seek the redress of the court if there is a dispute, regardless of their citizenship status. That's not our concern. So clearly ICE has a mandated responsibility. That's not what this is about. What we want is to preserve the neutrality of the court so that people can, we see when we turn on the nightly news what happens in countries where there is not good access to a strong judicial system. We want to make sure that people continue to access. And when we hear about people who are remaining in domestic violence situations, not seeking a restraining order because they are afraid to come to court, that is concerning because it puts children at risk, it puts victims at risk. How ICE conducts its activity in the community is another matter. But in courthouses, in terms of the central role they play to a civilized society, that's our concern.
I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next panel because I know the governor has a place to be. And we only have this hearing until 4:45, so I want to make sure we can get as many folks to testify as possible. So the next panel, come on up. Hi, welcome.
Chair Williamson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Alonso Leon, and I represent House District 22, which covers Woodburn through the north part of Salem. Today, I urge your support on House Bill 3464, which aims to provide clarity and guidance to our public bodies about what information they can and cannot share about an individual and how they can limit immigration enforcement at public facilities. Over the last few months, leaders in the community that I represent have come to me asking for help and asking for guidance. I have heard from teachers and principals who do not know what to do to protect their students if ICE comes asking for information. I have heard from city employees and local elected officials who want to know what they can do to make people feel safe. And I have heard from our immigrant communities and their allies asking what it is we are doing to protect their families, friends, and neighbors. The district that I represent is among the most diverse in our state. In Woodburn alone, over 60% of the population and nearly 4 out of every 5 students in the Woodburn School District identifies as Latino. Because of this, President Trump's increased immigration enforcement efforts personally impact a huge portion of the community I represent. Nearly everyone has a family member, a friend, a loved one who is living in constant fear of deportation. This culture of fear has meant that children in my district are afraid to go to school. It has meant that community members have been frightened to go out shopping or eating at restaurants, impacting small business owners downtown. It has meant that Woodburn is not recognizable as the vibrant and joyful town it once was only months ago. One small step that we can take as a state to support diverse communities like Woodburn and North Salem and alleviate this fear is to pass House Bill 3464 by providing guidance to our public bodies and prohibiting the sharing of personal information not required to be shared by the state or federal law, by our schools, cities, counties, and other public bodies, we can help end this fear. In March, the Attorney General and I both received a letter from the Mayor of Woodburn. She called on us to step up and help her city. This is a portion of what she wrote. Quote, regardless of immigration status, many in Woodburn are fearful they will be stopped, questioned, and even taken from their home simply based on the color of their skin, lack of language skills, or because of family relationships. Many of these people are first, second, and even third generation American citizens with children in our schools. I have concluded that we need your help explaining what rights exist for Oregon residents. Specifically, I'm asking you to provide guidelines advising Oregonians of their legal rights when interacting with federal immigration agents, end quote. My office has done what we can to share information about Oregonians' rights when interfacing with law enforcement, but we believe more is needed to ensure that our public bodies themselves also know their rights when ICE agents come asking for information about the Oregonians they serve and represent. In OLIS, you can see Mayor Figley's full letter to my office, along with her written testimony in support of this bill. Because our cities and other public bodies want and need this clarity and guidance. What this means in practice is that if ICE comes to a school, for example, without a warrant, looking for information on a student's parent or family member, the school district will be able to look to the Attorney General's guidance to know what they must disclose, what they are not allowed to disclose, and what they are able to disclose at their own discretion. This is incredibly important, as we know that ICE agents commonly ask for information that public bodies are not legally required to disclose, and in some cases are legally required to keep private. We want to ensure that in the intimidating situation of interacting with a federal law enforcement officer, our public bodies have a firm grasp on what information to share. For decades, Oregon has taken the firm stance that our public resources should not be commandeered for federal law enforcement. This bill simply protects our public bodies from federal overreach, and ensure that our resources and public bodies remain focused on the work before them. Thank you, and I urge your support.
Chair Hernandez.
Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs Rayfield. For the record, my name is Diego Hernandez. I am a state representative for House District 47 in East Portland. So I come here before you not just as a state legislator, but also as a school board member of the Reynolds School Board. And as you heard from our governor, attorney general, and my colleague, we have heard from school administrators, county judges, and other public bodies that they need guidance and that our state, from our state, and how they should respond to ICE requests. HB 3464 provides that clarity and consistency for our public bodies so that school principals know exactly how they can protect the private information of their students and their families. The judge mentioned Rockwood community. I serve on the Reynolds School Board. Rockwood students attend my school district. I've heard from countless families who have lost a father, a mother, an aunt, an uncle, and most recently of a family who just went homeless because they lost their father and the mom was not working and are looking for social services in order to stay at the district and not go homeless. HB 3464 also serves to strengthen the state in line with state and federal laws our state's protection by changing the ways that public bodies are authorized to collect and share data with the federal government. So if you ask, is this in line with state and federal law? Representative knows, yes, it is. this bill also will require the Attorney General to provide guidance to all public bodies, like was mentioned previously. So I encourage everybody to support this bill. It's very simple in terms of providing clarity and guidance and consistency for all of our public bodies, and that's why it's really great public policy, and I hope you can support this.
Thank you, Chair Williamson and Vice Chair Rayfield, Vice Chair McLean. My name is John Mirandis. I'm an immigration attorney, and I've been practicing law since 1997, member of the Oregon State Bar, practiced law with a firm of Mirandis and Sinlapasai. My practice is dedicated about 90% to the area of immigration law, with the remainder dedicated to family law. I'm a past chair of the Oregon chapter of the Immigration Lawyers Association, American Immigration Lawyers Association, or AILA, and currently serve as a co-liaison to ICE on behalf of AILA. And what that means is serve as a go-between between the private bar, our clients, and the local, or I should say the Oregon office of ICE, primarily interfacing with enforcement and removal operations, or ERO. The Oregon office is a sub-office of the Seattle field office in Oregon. Their offices in Portland, Medford, and Eugene. And as a liaison, we set up meetings on a regular basis to go over changes in policy and how that will impact our clients, how it impacts us as practitioners. And I'm generally familiar with procedures, both past and present. And I'm here today to talk about some of the changes that I've seen as a practitioner, as an advocate for my clients, and talk about some of those issues. We have certainly seen significant changes in enforcement activities since January 2017. And of course, the expansion of the priorities through the executive order, through President Trump, as well as the DHS Secretary John Kelly memo, the priorities have been expanded to include people who have been convicted of a crime, people who have been charged of a crime, and even someone who could be charged of a crime. All of them are enforcement priorities, and it can include someone who is a non-citizen driving their child to school or driving their child to the doctor. That could be deemed driving without a license or could be charged, and so that person really technically is enforcement priority. And before the current ICE enforcement priorities, we were operating under what's called the Priority Enforcement Program, where there were these three tiers of priority levels. And at the top of the tier, of course, were terrorists, felons, aggravated felons, people who were gang affiliated. And then as you went down, there were people who had three or more misdemeanors, people who were convicted of significant misdemeanors, be it DUI, domestic violence offense, a drug-related offense, and then everybody else. And so it was an allocation of resources by ICE. But that has changed under the current administration. Current administration still is targeting non-citizens who have had some issue with the law. They've been arrested and put into the system. They've been charged. They've had a court proceeding. But as they're targeting these individuals, ICE is actually arresting collaterals or people that are nearby. And so if someone in a family is the target of an arrest, ICE will then inquire as to everybody in the family or everybody in the van or everyone in the vehicle as to their immigration status. And so in my years of experience and as an immigration attorney, this is the most significant increase that I've seen in enforcement. It has had a chilling effect on the community. We see people who go to court to attend their court proceeding, and even if the charges are dismissed and the person's found not guilty, or the charges are dismissed, as they're walking out of the courthouse, ICE has arrested people, even in the presence of their defense attorney. And so, really, any contact whatsoever with law enforcement puts the person into the process, into the system. And we've seen DACA recipients that have had a pending DUI charge arrested. And ICE has told us that it is now, under the new policies, they will arrest DACA recipients. They will terminate DACA, even though that person could go through the diversion program, could complete diversion, and once again become eligible for DACA. But so we know that enforcement has expanded, and we know that information is being shared with ICE. And certainly as a private practitioner, I don't know all the ins and outs of how ICE gathers their information, but I do know that that the information sharing is a concern, and more and more folks are targeted by ICE. A particular concern are victims of crimes, people who are eligible for what's called a U visa, or victims of human trafficking eligible for a T visa. We're concerned that these victims are not coming forward like they used to. Those programs were designed to create a partnership with law enforcement and the immigrant communities, and it has had a chilling effect. Courts are no longer granting continuances because ICE Chief Counsel has their new policies handed down where they can't agree when those cases are pending. Stays of removal are not being granted. And so as an immigration practitioner, as somebody that gives presentations to community members, I can tell you that there is a real sense of fear and distrust in the community. People are afraid to go to court. They're afraid to go to school. They're afraid to seek medical attention. I have conferred with other immigration experts in the national arena at both National AILA as well as the Immigrant Legal Resource Center, ILRC, regarding this bill, and it has been confirmed that others agree that it's in compliance with federal law, and I think that it will be beneficial to our community, to our state, to our public bodies, and for these reasons, I strongly support this bill.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Leon, you said what rights exist for Oregon residents? And I think we're creating some fuzziness, I think, between terms. Because when you say resident, do you mean a citizen of the U.S.? Or are you saying just someone who resides in that area?
Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto, this bill helps all members of our state community.
Okay. What rights do people have that just reside here? I guess that would be, and you know, I think there's a lot of fuzziness in this. You know, when the governor spoke, she talked about discrimination, that if you agree with the rule of law or the laws that we have in place, that can be discriminatory. And I think that's one of the problems that I see is, you know, if you are on one side of this or the other side, you know, one side you're labeled as discriminating if you agree with the rule of law. And yet this problem has gone on for so long, you know, that's part of the problem. When you say 4 out of 5 children up there are Hispanic, then but how many of them are legally here and are a citizen? I asked Representative Nose here, does it mean, the governor again said, Oregonians, we should protect Oregonians. I said, does that mean you have to be a citizen of the U.S. to be an Oregonian, or is it just that you reside here, you're an Oregonian? If I moved to Canada and rented a house, does that make me a Canadian? Would they have the right then to come and take me and send me back here if I didn't get there legally? And so these seem to be the issues, you know, that are underlying this. And whether this bill is maybe a short-term fix for a long-term problem, I guess that's what we're trying to discern here. So maybe that's a lot, but.
Chair Williamson and Representative Barreto, I'll take a stab at this first. I think it's my understanding that the bill is really, it's saying that the federal immigration authorities, of course, have the task of enforcing immigration laws, and non-citizens or undocumented persons in our state, while maybe they don't have a legal status in this country, many of which are actually working on a legal status or have a pending application that gives them a right to be here, but they still have due process rights under the law. And while they may not have a work card, they may not have that status, they do have due process rights, and certainly I know that our in the interest of public safety and protecting other citizens of our state, you know, law enforcement wants to protect the community. And also I wanted to point out that, especially when we talk about schools and children, of course, children that are born here in the United States are U.S.-born citizens. Right. And so a lot of times when we're talking about schools, really it's the children are U.S. citizens. They are fully documented, and sometimes it's their parents that came many, many years ago and that are not citizens. And when I say many years ago, in my practice, my experience, it's normally they've been here for decades, 10, 15, 20 years. And these are the blended families, the families of, you know, U.S. citizen children that we often encounter.
One little follow-up. I would assume those that are trying to get U.S. citizenship and are in the process, they are protected. Is that correct?
There's so many different benefits out there, so I suppose it really depends. It could be a petition that's filed for somebody that's going to take many, many years for a priority date, and so they're not protected when that petition's pending. Once they apply for adjustment of status or a green card, that's when they sort of enter into that protected status. So sometimes yes, sometimes no, but as I was alluding to in my testimony, an applicant for a U visa, for example, ICE has told us that a person with a prior order of removal in the past would be able to demonstrate that they have a valid bona fide U visa pending, but nowadays you will not get any protection unless you have what's called a prima facie determination, which basically means sort of a pre-approval. So sometimes protected, sometimes not.
Can I add to it?
Sure.
Chair Williamson, Representative Barreto. I think this conversation has happened over and over again in this state, and hence why we may have a statute that exists currently called the Sanctuary Statute, because that conversation also happened in the 80s. And I think the question becomes who that resides in your state, what are they considered? And over and over again as a state, we've said, whoever resides in Oregon is an Oregonian based on our values. And that could be a philosophical conversation more so through this conversation, but I think it's a values one. And I think human rights should be universal and are universal. And these are members of our community who work in our community, who participate in our community, and like was mentioned, have kids who are citizens and participate fully in our education system. I'd like to think that our values extend to where we don't reject anybody, no matter who you are or your documentation, in a hospital and education system.
Hey, can I respond to that real quick? I think our values do reflect on our rule of law, too, and how we value that and how we respect that, too.
Right, and exactly. And as a state, we, you know, like you said, it's a short-term fix for a long-term problem. And immigration is a federal issue, and we do need federal immigration reform at the federal level. But as a state, we get to decide right now, what do we do? And this is crucial. Do we give clarity, guidance, and consistency to our public bodies so they know what to do, instead of right now where there's so much confusion? And not only the confusion, but there's families being torn apart. These are great community members these are students who are getting educated and are losing one of their parents. I hear from teachers who have to deal with students who have lost a parent. I can never imagine how that would ever feel like. I can never relate to that. But teachers and community members and students have to face losing family members from their community and classrooms.
Olvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think maybe my question was just answered, but just to reiterate, it's my understanding that regardless of citizenship, people in the United States have certain rights, and I will name one, labor rights, for example, even under federal law, that apply to people regardless that work in the United States regardless of their citizenship. And so I know that there's many benefits and many protections and rights that extend to all people regardless of their citizenship. But I think you might have already answered that. But
well, just if I maybe could expand on that. So Chair Williamson, Representative Holvey. You're right, labor rights, victims' rights. I know that as a family law attorney, when there's a child in immediate danger and there's a custody proceeding, both parents can be undocumented, but the U.S. citizen child, a determination needs to be made best interests of the child by a judge. And so we certainly there are many circumstances, wage and hour claims, wrongful discharge, right? And so that's correct. And I think that in most judicial venues that I'm aware of, somebody without a legal status can present a claim. That's correct.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
And our final invited panel, Carmen Rubio, Linda Herrera, and Justin Freeman.
I'm going to stay till 5. I'll take all the testimony.
I'll stay till 5, too.
I'll sit here till we're done. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Williamson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carmen Rubio, and I'm the Executive Director of Latino Network. And we're a nonprofit organization that's dedicated to improving the lives of Latino youth, families, and communities in Oregon. And I'm testifying today in support of House Bill 3464, as you've already heard, in light of the recent stepped-up enforcement that our communities have been living in fear. Our organization serves more than 3,600 Latino and immigrant youth and families every year. We work to remove barriers to families and young people reaching their full potential by promoting early literacy, encouraging parent involvement, working with gang-involved and adjudicated youth, and providing academic support to students. Our families know that we have their best interests at heart, and as a result, they thrive in our programs. However, following the executive orders, we've witnessed a sharp decline in our youth and parents seeking the services that they need. Young people are still afraid to go to school, and their families are afraid of seeking out services for which they are eligible, for fear of giving out any personal information about themselves that would lead to separation from their families. And in fact, we were getting so many questions from families fearing this separation that about who would care for their children, many of their children who are American citizens, that our organization partnered with the Oregon Law Center to develop a toolkit for families to plan for their child's care in case of immediate removal. Just in our own organization, 7 people have been targeted or detained since March. They include 1 DACA staff, 3 parent participants, and 3 youth participants. And in one instance, our staff had just concluded a meeting with one parent about a child who was just awarded the opportunity to go to a national conference. He was very proud of his daughter, and on his way home, he was pulled over and detained. And now this child's whole future has been upended. And it's because of instances like this that we also receive calls from teachers, superintendents, healthcare workers, nonprofits, and other state agencies asking for advice or training because of school absences or missed doctor appointments, or just basically how should they prepare and protect these families, and what do they tell their staff. We wish we had every answer for them, but all we can do is refer them to the already swamped nonprofit attorneys who are already working on different cases. Government agencies desperately need guidance to eliminate confusion and provide consistency and peace of mind for families and children. The families that we work with, they trust us, and we take this very seriously. Our work depends on it. And so when my staff and I are increasingly asked if the information they provide us puts them at risk of being exposed, we answer them truthfully that we've taken every possible legal step to ensure their privacy, confidentiality, and safety, but we cannot guarantee it beyond our organization. And as one of many nonprofits experiencing similar challenges, we can only do so much. And this bill is critical, and this is the missing piece that will enable us to confidently say to them, yes, that our state has taken steps to protect every Oregonian's confidentiality and privacy, and ensures that no agency will share their information, and yes, that our state is working with your child's school or clinic or organization to ensure that everyone's information is protected. We see this bill as a vital step towards building trust with the community, and these families deserve peace of mind. They deserve to hear loud and clear from their state that Oregon has a policy of not sharing their information for the purposes of separating families. And finally, that their state believes every Oregonian deserves to be treated with dignity and respect, regardless of their country of birth. We're so grateful for the leadership of Representative Leon and Representative Hernandez for bringing this bill forward. And for our staff and participants, it's literally affecting their lives. So I urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Linda Herrera, and I am the Diversity and Equity Officer at Chemeketa Community College and have been with the college for about 30 years. Chemeketa serves almost 30,000 students a year and has locations in the Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties in the cities of Salem, Woodburn, McMinnville, Brooks, and Dallas. I am here today to testify in support of House Bill 3464, which will provide our colleges with the guidance that we need to protect our students and draws a clear line in the sand when it comes to keeping information private for our students. Our college students have a high level of anxiety caused by the unique challenges they face as a result of their legal status. Concerns related to finances, fear of deportation, and a sense of isolation weigh heavily on them and their families. At Chemeketa Community College, we have seen the pain, fear, and anxiety that our students, such as deferred action for childhood arrivals, DACA students, and their families experience on a daily basis. Our faculty report seeing anxiety in their students and in feeling their own anxiety at the possibility of ICE that will show up in their classrooms. They feel obligated to protect student privacy, but also want to follow the laws. Even though there have been certain assurances made, the schools will not be targeted. The fear exists, and it is real to the individuals who feel it. House Bill 3464 would help provide additional guidance and support so that our community colleges can provide the safest educational environment possible. These students have the dream to go to college, not only for themselves, but for their families as well. The increase on ICE enforcement has held many of our students hostage to the possibility of being separated from their families and quenching all of their dreams of pursuing an education and becoming the first ones to attend college, their dreams to a better life. We need to let our immigrant students know that we stand with them, and to do that, our schools and other public schools need clear guidance on what their legal options are. With increasingly aggressive immigration enforcement tactics, we need to be prepared for ICE to come to our schools of higher education seeking information on Oregonians. As an educator, I am asking you to provide me, to provide us, with the tools that I need to protect my students, our students. Thank you for your time, and I urge you for your support.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Justin Freeman, here on behalf of the Oregon Wine Growers Association. We are the only statewide organization representing Oregon's wineries and vineyards. I'm here today strongly in support of House Bill 3464. The past 10 years, our industry has seen tremendous growth. One of the biggest challenges we face is labor shortages, however. Recent changes to federal immigration policies have compounded those challenges. One thing that we've been seeing with our employees is a chilling effect, where even if our employee is here legally, maybe their wife, maybe their husband, maybe their child isn't, it makes them afraid to drive their kids to school or to drive to work. And this bill is an important step in addressing that uncertainty, and we strongly urge your support. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you very much. So that completes the invited testimony from the sponsors of the bill. I want to make sure that opponents of the bill have an equal amount of time. I will stay until we are done with testimony. In this part, in the public hearing portion of this bill, to ensure equal time, I want to make sure that opponents they have about 3 minutes each for the number of people who are signed up. So thank you all very much. We'll start with Ted Campbell, Jim Ludwig, and Josie Smith. Members, I know that we were slated to adjourn at 4:45. I will sit here and take testimony. I know some of you have other committees. So do what you need to do, but I want to make sure that we have equal time. Hi, welcome. Just please remember to say your name for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Ted Campbell. I'm a legal citizen of the United States, a legal citizen of the state of Oregon, and a retired command sergeant major from the United States Army. Governor Brown states that we must ensure the civil rights of all Oregonians are protected and that the rule of law is enforced. The law states that there is a legal way to become citizens of the United States. Is the government in Oregon enforcing the law? No. Is the state of Oregon respecting the rule of law? No. It seems that the elected officials of Oregon only enforce the laws that they like. The state is short on money, we are told, and yet they give money to aid the illegals that are here and ignore the legal citizens of Oregon. You want to pass new laws or rules on how to share data, but there are laws on the books that tell you how to share the data. But the state does not enforce those laws. In fact, the state sells the data to people that call you, want to sell things and everything else to make money for the state. You can make all the laws you want, but if the federal government shows up with a warrant, you're going to give them the information. It seems strange how you give lawbreakers more protection than you do to those who obey the law. If you are so worried about illegals, provide them a way to become legal. Let the state loan them money at a low rate of interest so they can sign up to become citizens of the United States and take the responsibilities of citizens of the United States. Those who want guidance on the laws, tell them to read the laws that are on the books. You don't have to create more. That's our problem. We have more laws than anybody can understand, and they're written by lawyers, so blue-collar people like myself cannot understand them. Remember that if you support not following the law of the land, you become an accomplice after the fact, and the federal government can prosecute you as a felon. Thank you.
Thank you. And we don't have a timer up, but we're shooting for about 3 minutes, and Aaron will get the timer fixed, but I want to respect everyone's time, so thank you.
Well, Aaron's a good friend of mine, and she'll give me 4 minutes. For the record, my name is Jim Ludwig. I reside at 7500 Southwest Leibold Road in McMinnville. I'm a member of the Oregonians for Immigration Reform Board. And because of my position with our organization, I've had many, many legal immigrants want to share with me their stories of why they're here, how they got here. I've never met a legal immigrant in my life who said they chose to come to the United States by putting on a blindfold, putting a map of the world on the wall, and throwing a dart, and they happened to hit America. They chose America because we're the most successful country in the world. One of the reasons for our success is this concept of the rule of law, which people up here don't seem to understand. The rule of law means that everybody obeys our laws. You don't have the ability to pick and choose which laws you like and obey those you like and disobey the ones you don't. This bill does that, and it's outrageous. Every nation has the sovereign right to set its own immigration policies. Every American citizen has the constitutional right to advocate for policies that they think are in the best interest. House Bill 3464 is a violation of all those concepts. Why, if the first thing a person does when they're in the United States is break the law and they're rewarded for it, why would you think they would want to obey any laws? And if they're put above citizens, what does that say? In the summary of House Bill 3464, it reads, quote, prohibits public body from disclosing specified information concerning a person unless required by state or federal law, close quote. Well, what happens if a state employee or a county employee or a city employee recognizes an illegal alien on the street and they knows they've been deported? So they call up ICE as a state employee. What happens? Are they fined? Are they fired? Are they hit with a stick? What happens if somebody violates this law because they want to do due diligence with what's important for the United States? I want to read quickly, just briefly, the Federal Immigration and Nationality Act, Section 8, U.S.C. 1324. And it says, any person, quote, any person who encourages or induces an alien to reside knowingly in reckless regard of the fact that such residence is in violation of law shall be punished as provided for each alien in respect for whom such violation occurs under Title 18. And among those are knowingly assisting an illegal alien, due to personal convictions. And that's all I've heard up here, personal convictions. They don't think that our immigration law is important. House Bill 3634 should not advance. It's a violation of federal immigration law. It encourages drug traffickers to come into Oregon. House Bill 3464 is a slap in the face to the millions of people who've immigrated here legally. It punishes American citizens who have a greater loyalty to the United States than they do to Salem or Portland. This is outrageous, and you ought to be ashamed of it.
Thank you very much.
My name is Joseph C. Smith. I come from Northeast Portland, and I have the privilege today to read a letter from Elizabeth von Staveren, and this appeared in the Statesman Journal on Monday. The title is Oregon Governor Needs to Brush Up on Her Civics and History. Oregon's Governor Kate Brown and Attorney General Alan Rosenblum have apparently never learned the basics of civics or history. They don't seem to understand that Oregon is not a nation, it's a part of the United States. The United States is a nation ruled under federal laws that apply to all states. One primary duty of a nation is to protect its citizens by controlling which and how many citizens of other countries may enter it. This is done through immigration laws that require official inspection of all persons entering the country. Those who sneak in without inspection or overstay their visas are here illegally. Through HB 3464, a bill to protect privacy of undocumented immigrants, Governor Brown and AG Rosenbaum defy federal law. They are pushing for an end to the limits of any kind of immigration, but a nation cannot exist with open borders. Already due to excessive immigration, population has grown beyond environmental carrying capacity, and many people have died in terrorist attacks made easy by poor immigration controls. State officials and legislatures should be thinking about what is best for residents of this state and citizens of our country, and stop trying to dismantle federal immigration laws that are good and necessary. Elizabeth von Staveren, McMinnville. My feeling about this law is really it's an unlaw and an undoer of laws, an untangler of laws. What I worry about is if there's ever an audit of the voter's role, this will further embed the knowledge that the person, the voter, is that some voters are here illegally. So I'm extremely upset by it, and may I recommend that you not approve it.
Thank you all very much. Cynthia Kendall, Kay Bridges, and Becky Lemler. I'm sorry in advance if I slaughter your names.
Jody has something she wants to say. I will.
Okay. Yeah, we're ready. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you, everyone, for letting me come here and speak today. My name is Becky Lemler. I'm from Elmira, down by Eugene. I cannot believe that I'm hearing this law. If this bill is passed, you will be making a law to break a law, to break laws. You are not strengthening privacy protection for vulnerable populations. You're protecting lawbreakers. I am a vulnerable person, and I am living in fear that some lawbreaker is going to kill me. I avoid going to large gatherings for fear of being attacked, especially during holidays with all the things that we're hearing about in the news, right here in America. These lawbreakers have killed American citizens and ripped those citizens' families apart for forever. You don't need to make another law to provide guidance to public bodies as how to interpret with immigration enforcement activities. There's already laws that cover that. Senator Wyden himself says to enforce the laws that are already on the books when it comes to illegal immigration. That would be respecting the rule of law, not creating a law that prevents federal law from being followed, which is what HB 3464 does. If ICE comes asking for information, give it to them. I am sick and tired of seeing my tax dollars being used against me, a law-abiding American citizen, for protecting lawbreakers. The government's highest priority is to protect its lawful citizens, not the lawbreakers. Oregon legislatures should not encourage lawlessness. Please vote no on House Bill 3464. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. It's an understatement to say that we have a serious...
Can you say your name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. Cynthia Kendall.
Thank you.
I'm president of Oregonians for Immigration Reform. I think it's an understatement to say that we have a serious problem here. The lax enforcement of our immigration laws over the years has put all of us in a very difficult situation. Whether sneaking over the border without inspection or overstaying a visa, people here illegally are in a tight spot. No matter how you choose to spin it, it's a fact that these people are breaking the law. House Bill 3464 is a misguided effort to help these people. But to justify the behavior and to go so far as to protect the presence of those people here illegally, the sponsors of this bill must also accept the ongoing law breaking that goes along with it. Using a fraudulent or stolen identity, working here illegally, being paid under the table, driving without a license or insurance, and much more, all make their illegal presence even more concerning to citizens. Are we to accept that certain law breaking is acceptable and has the blessing of this administration? Is it acceptable to break some laws if it serves the purpose of those that benefit, such as businesses that choose to hire illegal labor? Are the sponsors of this bill prepared to accept full responsibility for the more serious crimes committed by the people that are here illegally, the ones you are advocating to shield from detection and possible deportation with this legislation? What's even worse to me, strategically plotting to not cooperate with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, known as ICE, to even go so far as to try and pass legislation shielding these people from legal consequences of their illegal actions is disturbing on every level to me. It leaves me doubting the ethics and sincerity of the oath of office taken by the sponsors of this legislation. Even if your intentions are noble, the sad point is that your efforts will do nothing to help the people that you claim to be trying to help. You are indeed compounding their problems by providing cover for them to be here illegally. I see this legislation as lose-lose for everyone, even the people you are erroneously claiming to help. Thank you.
For the record, my name is Kay Bridges. I live in Portland. And I'm probably one of the senior members here in the room today, because I remember the end of World War II. And I remember some of the mistakes we made in those days, because my parents were the youngest of their family. I wrote a very short handwritten testimony, so I have a preface for it after listening to everybody today. Because they were the youngest in their family, I went with them to hear a lot of stories. And I know the mistakes that were made and the people that came here, supposedly legally even, that were bent on destroying our country. So I have that kind of emotional impact when I hear what I hear today. What I wrote was, the immigrants who come here legally will have no problem sharing their information, just like I wouldn't have problem sharing my information. And the ones who have broken the law to come here illegally should always have their information disclosed. They have no rights under our laws, and the state of Oregon should not try to circumvent those laws in this way with executive orders or anything else. to do otherwise puts all of us in danger. And it probably actually puts those who are here illegally in more danger. More danger. Because they can be intimidated by those who will go after them because they know they're illegal. That will actually do them more harm, as Cynthia said, than trying to protect them supposedly with this law. I also found it distressing that our governor would mention the Max attack when she has shut down and helped to shut down mental facilities in this state which could have prevented that attack. That person needed help. They were sick. They were sick. And we have been shutting down one after another in the spring, and then another one. And our governor has been complicit in allowing those facilities to be closed, where that person might have been directed and saved from himself, actually, and causing that distress that we all feel because of that event today. I urge you to oppose House Bill 3464 today. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Chair.
I'll invite up Becky Gladstone and Reverend Zachary Horman.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee for the...
Talk louder, Becky.
A little louder, okay. How's this?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, thank you for taking our testimony. For the record, it's Rebecca Gladstone. I'm speaking on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. You okay?
They can't hear you in the back.
You gotta yell into it.
Yeah.
Okay, how's this?
I know you're quiet. Great.
Sorry, thank you. I'll try to make it quick. This bill is fundamentally a right to privacy. It repeatedly and comprehensively adheres to state and federal laws. It does not give benefits of citizenship to those who are not citizens. This bill calls for confidentiality of personal information. It's relevant to us for a number of reasons. We were invited to and attend quarterly regional meetings convened by ICE, Department of Homeland Security, TSA, the FBI, USCIS, immigrant groups, and others concerned about our climate of incivility. Our initial impetus came from an elementary school teacher using our civics education curriculum for our mock elections program used by students from elementary school through university and citizenship preparation classes. This fourth grade teacher said her students would hear government and think ICE. The people who take her family members away. She was not able to teach them about voting rights in America because they were afraid and not receptive to learning. The League nationally has acted. We call on our national social policy, secure equal rights and equal opportunity for all, promote social and economic justice, and the health and safety of all Americans. From our national president, on the 31st of January this year, the League of Women Voters is opposed to the deportation of non-criminal, undocumented immigrants. The League supports cities, towns, counties, and states that make a decision not to cooperate with federal deportation and enforcement actions that include non-criminal, undocumented immigrants. Moreover, the Trump administration's orders are of dubious legality. It is simply wrong and a perversion of the American system of justice for the executive branch to refuse to obey federal court orders. The League is opposed to discrimination, including discrimination in immigration based on religion. The Trump administration's orders appear to be targeted at Muslims and immigrants from majority Muslim nations. At the crux of this concern is defining our treatment of non-citizens, of those who may be different in Oregon today, honoring the founding principles of our country, respecting the many immigrants who came here as most of us and our predecessors have. We urge your strong support. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this legislation.
Thank you. My name is Zachary Harmon. I'm an Episcopal priest that lives in Wilsonville and serves here in Salem. And I am speaking today in support of HB 3464 because in my experience as a priest, this seems as something very important for the ensuring that our communities are safe and welcoming. Just a couple months ago, we had up in Gresham at one of our Episcopal churches, we had a lay leader, a member of the parish who was there on DACA and was going successfully through a DUI diversion. And he was lifted by ICE and taken into detention. Thankfully, there was a lot of public outcry. I mean, he was a member of the food bank, a valuable member of society, and released after the public outcry. But these kinds of things create feelings of instability and safety when even like a food bank member and leader can be seized. And in my time as a priest, I can tell you there are plenty of families who are concerned about having their information out there. There are family members who are terrified about if something happens with their status, that their loved ones could be deported to horrendous situations that they've escaped. And there are families struggling in the wake of deportation to figure out how to financially make things work. And so this is a concern of great weight here in the state of Oregon, and I would encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you both very much. Lola Trope, Carol Leek, and Roxanne Ross. Feel free to go in whatever order you'd like. Just remember to say your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Carol Leek, and thank you so much for letting me talk today. I'm against this bill because it's wrong. It encourages illegal activities, and it's not fair to those who have come here legally. This is not a discrimination issue, like our governor says. This is a follow-the-law issue. It's also a backdoor into stopping ICE from doing their job and protecting us from those who want to harm us or those who actually do hurt us by breaking our current laws. I don't want to stop ICE from doing their jobs. I was brought up by a police officer and was taught to follow the laws. If I didn't, then I take the consequences. In this case, it's being arrested, being sent back to where you came from so you can come back legally. The law of the land is that people enter legally. When here illegally, they qualify for benefits and perks like the rest of us Americans do. There should be laws kept that enforce this. Now you want legal taxpayers to not only support breaking the law, but to contribute to our hard-earned money to support illegal immigrants? Do you not see the irony here? And what about those immigrants who have come here legally, built a good life, and follow the rules of the land? Now you want them to pay for those who jump fences, come here illegally, murder, rape, and kill accidentally innocent people, American citizens? If children are crying at school, like the governor says, because they're afraid that when they get home, their parents may be gone, and because their parents have done illegal activities, then you know what? It's on the parents. They can change that. Why don't they go back, get legal, and come back here? Why don't they teach your children the laws of the land here if that's where they want to be? Instead of seeing how much more they can get for free, why don't they focus on making themselves legal? Then their children won't be scared. The parents should set a good example because you know what? That's what we do in America. I do not want my tax dollars to support illegal immigrants with more benefits than American citizens get. Legal immigrants, yes. I'd rather that money go into helping homeless people or to our veterans who have fought for our freedoms and deserve those benefits. I want to continue to support our laws that have been put into place for the benefit and protection of all Americans. I truly believe in America first, including legal immigrant citizens. Should this bill pass, and as much as I would love it, you can be guaranteed that there will be a President Trump 2020. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Leela Trope, and I live in Springfield, Oregon. I almost fell asleep back there on you. Sorry. You know, I didn't have anything written, and so consequently, I wrote it as I sat here, but the best ideas usually come from other people's protestations, and I got to hear a lot of that, obviously. And I'm heavily involved in the Oregon Citizen Lobby, in politics down in Lane County. Lane County declared itself a sanctuary county a long time ago, probably before, and Eugene did as well with Kitty Piercy, before Kate Brown even came out and said that she was declaring the state a sanctuary state. You know, the city I live in Springfield, has now just said that they're looking to raise property taxes $1.38 per thousand. $1.38 per thousand. They raised the gas taxes recently, and I look at this and I think to myself, you know what? I'm okay. I have food. I help people. I donate. I do whatever I can. But I met somebody who's going to run for office, and he said, schools need more money. And I've been into Springfield County Commission meetings, and I actually had people say, well, there just aren't enough tax dollars to go around. We just need more tax dollars. Well, I'm here to tell you, between PERS and between the money that the state has spent on issues that have been unresolved, and they can't find any more money. They're looking for money under every single rock. And I said this to the people downstairs in the Japanese wonderful display. Yeah, money is finite. Money does not come from government. Government doesn't make money. Government does enforce laws. Government does enforce rules. If I were to say to one of these policemen right now as I walked out and he said, I'm sorry, who are you? What's your name? Where do you live? And I said, I don't have to tell you a thing. You know where I'd be? I'd be heading to a police station where they would then be looking for me in a database, wondering why I didn't want to tell them who I was. Well, going back to what I told the people downstairs, it's egregious what happened when the Japanese were kicked out of this country. It was terrible. But it was a time of war. And I have to ask you, we don't know what the people look like that want to kill us. We don't know who we're at war with. We don't even know the issues. We don't know why people hate us. How the beans are we supposed to find them if we don't know their name, don't know where they were born, we don't know where they came from, we have no clue who they are. You can't pass this bill.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Roxanne Ross, and I live in Gresham, Oregon. And I don't want to just repeat stuff that's been said, although I am deeply worried that this could make Oregon more of a destination state for terrorists by having these protections. Really what I wanted to bring up is something that no one has talked about so far, and I think it is an overreach of this bill, but it prohibits the release of aggregated information. So I remember years ago, I have some friends who were on the sheriff's deputies in Multnomah County, and they would talk about how much they could reduce the stack of outstanding warrants when they would have a weekend where they would draw in a lot of officers to try to serve the warrants, and how they have stacks of warrants that they cannot serve because they cannot identify the person who the warrant is against. There's, because that person was not a citizen, they could not gather enough information to tell if there's more than one warrant for the same person. The names were similar, but they, you know, they were uncertain whether they were getting an actual date of birth. There's no documentation or whatever from the person that had the warrant. They just didn't have enough information to even serve them. So this bill also restricts and prohibits the release of aggregated information. So we've done lots of talking about protecting someone's individual address and phone. how come, are we just going to try to sweep this all under the rug and pretend like we don't have a problem with illegal immigration in Oregon, that it's not growing, that we have no way of, because public entities are prohibited from releasing any aggregated information about this? I mean, what is the purpose of having that in this bill? I think it's a complete overreach, and it is the opposite of transparency. It is the state of Oregon trying to hide from Oregon citizens the problem that they've helped to create by making us a destination state for illegal aliens.
Thank you very much. Thank you. John Macklin and Peter Dane, and that is the final folks I have signed up. Thank you. Please remember to say your name for the record.
Okay. I'm John Macklin. I'm a citizen from Gresham, Oregon. And I'm just here to urge you to just stop this bill right now before it goes any further. And tell you the truth, it seems a little crazy to me to have to come here and explain why I feel that way, despite all the semantics and rationalizations that the proponents have talked about. The bill, on the face of it, plainly enables lawbreaking, it obstructs law enforcement, and it rewards people whose defining act and basically their way of life is to ignore our laws. The proponents have written and spoken a lot about immigrant rights and even Latino rights. That's very, very misleading. This bill supports only illegal aliens. It's really a slap in the face to the people that bothered to immigrate legally, as well as the rest of the legitimate citizens. We've heard about an atmosphere of fear among immigrants and even, again, among Latinos. They had to drag race into it. The only people with anything to fear are the illegal immigrants. If somebody is Latino or an immigrant of any kind, they will not be affected by ICE enforcement. They will come up clean and be undisturbed. Again, the difference is as simple as shopping versus shoplifting. There's legal immigration and illegal immigration, and it's got nothing to do with race. We heard a lot about the Oregonians, respect for Oregonians. If that term's broad enough to include anybody that happens to be physically in the state, even if they snuck in illegally, it's a meaningless term. Citizen has no benefit and no meaning if you broaden it that much. We hear concerns about businesses. If a business relies on criminal activity to support itself, how legitimate is that business? And the wineries, if a winery depends upon illegal aliens to stay in business, and they're admitting that right out in public, that that's their strategy, are they really a legitimate business? Shouldn't they be looking for ways to get a legal workforce, either lobby for guest workers or attract U.S. citizens? We hear the attorney speak about non-citizens, all the discrimination against non-citizens, another meaningless term. Non-citizens includes legal immigrants with nothing to fear, legal residents, people on visas, students, all with nothing to fear. We're talking about illegal immigrants. Again, we get all these semantics that obscure the issue. So I would urge you just to let this drop right here. Thank you very much, and thank you for extending the time to hear the citizens.
Thank you.
Oh, good afternoon. My name is Pete Dane. I live in Salem, and I appreciate all the testimony, pro and con, that's been going on. It's quite worthy and educational. And I like to take a slightly different approach, and I've been an active member in the Marion County Democratic Party for over a decade. And as a liberal, I believe in, and a humanitarian, I believe in accountability and responsibility. And I don't think that the Attorney General and the Governor's support of HB 3464 shows much responsibility in that respect. What is really needed is more education so people know what their rights are and responsibilities. But this bill, if passed, will just further impact the respect for the law and due process. On an economic and environmental level, this law is going to further encourage non sustainability in the state. And I hope that, you know, as a Democrat liberal, we try to promote more responsibility and accountability. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony. Thank you, committee members, for staying late. I'm glad we got through everybody. So thank you. And with that, I will close the public hearing on HB 3464. Aaron, is there anything left?
No, there's not another chair.
All right. Thank you. We are adjourned. All right. Thank you. We are adjourned.